Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new film Space Jam, A New Legacy, How to Deter a Robber, Escape Room, Tournament of Champions, Fear Street Part 3, 1666, and Gunpowder Milkshake. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the new Apple TV Plus series, Schmigadoon. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news this week is the box office for Black Widow, which was quite good. Just over $80 million over the weekend last week, which is the highest that any movie has done during the pandemic. And again, a reminder, we're still in the pandemic. We can't start talking post-pandemic because there's surges and there's already starting to be some restrictions showing up in places like California, and in particular Los Angeles. They're starting to bring back some mask mandates because of the Delta variant. And this is important because part of the thing that suppressed the box office in the first place was New York and LA having either theaters closed or with limited capacity, because they amount to such a huge portion of movie viewing. Now, it's not at the level of something like Captain Marvel, which came out right after one of the big Avengers movies, or Iron Man 3, which came out right after the first Avengers film. This is still a very big number, and a lot of people realize that there is a certain amount of box office being back, but that's still not at the level that it would have done probably in a non-pandemic situation. I imagine Black Widow, if it had come out in 2020 when they were expecting it to and there wasn't any pandemic to deal with, it probably would have been well over $125 million. Now, the big thing people are talking about when it comes to Black Widow is the fact that Disney, unexpectedly came out and announced, they didn't announce any real hard and fast numbers, but they basically came out and announced that over the weekend last week, they got $60 million in Disney Premier Access payments, which means at least 2 million accounts paid for this thing to watch at home. And I knew there was going to be a higher number than we saw with either like Mulan or Raya and the Last Dragon or Cruella, because I started seeing people popping up on my Facebook feed, just people I knew, not film critics, but people like I'd gone to high school with, talking about renting it and watching it with their families over the weekend. So I'm like, okay, you're going to start seeing some higher numbers with this. The other reason Disney released that is I think it was a bit of bragging, because they're like, hey, we got $60 million for putting this on the Disney Plus service. Because here's the thing. It's like making $100 million. Because the deal I'd heard that Disney had struck with the theaters for this one was theaters keep 40% of the revenue and the studio keeps 60% of the revenue. Which means that for every $100 million, Disney takes home 60. So this is equivalent to making or at least when it comes on the balance sheet in terms of money to Disney, this is like getting an extra $100 million that weekend. This would be like having an opening box office of $180 million this past weekend. That's enormous, pandemic or not. But what that shows is Disney, as I've been saying for the better part of a year, they're trying to find a way to service both audiences. And they're finding that something in the gamble that they paid off was if they get enough people to rent this at home, it's worth it. Now, there's a lot of people out there saying, well, they're leaving money on the table and this is going to hurt VOD sales. We'll see. I mean, $30 is a steep price. When it comes down to $15.99 or $20, maybe people will do that. Plus, people are still purchasing it as Disney Premier Access. It's not going to show up on Disney Plus for a couple months. So people might choose it this weekend. Ultimately, Disney's going to look at the whole balance sheet and say, okay, we lost some money on VOD later in the process, but it was worth it because the amount of money we got for this at home access offsets that. So that's important to note. This was a win for Disney, even though it's getting widely reported that it's not. Now, the other thing to take note about streaming, this is something I've been saying for a while, the Emmy nominations came out this week. And to me, the big news of the story, which is the same thing that was last year, even more so now, is that streaming is king. The networks that were getting 70 to 100 plus nominations were a lot of streaming services. The broadcasts, ABC, NBC, CBS, I mean, they're getting 20, maybe 5 nominations. And a chunk of those nominations are for reality TV shows. But the stuff that people really notice, the dramas and the acting and the comedy, those are coming from streaming services. Now, Apple TV Plus didn't have a ton, but they had enough with Ted Lasso, kind of breaking records for a freshman comedy, to get as many nominations as it did. Disney Plus had more than 70 nominations for stuff like WandaVision and The Mandalorian. So that shows that Disney's doing something right. And what you notice is stuff like Peacock and Paramount Plus, which I would say are the lesser services right now because they really haven't found a way to break through. Both of those had just a handful, like, you know, 4 or 5 nominations. And it shows because they do not have the buzzworthy shows yet. So streaming is basically doing to cable what cable did to broadcast 10 years ago. And I mean, broadcast is really getting left in the dust. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Turning Red. This is the next Pixar movie, and it's coming to theaters on March 11th.
All right, guys. The quadratic formula. Let the fun begin.
No, no, no. This isn't happening.
What is that?
Oh, snap.
All right. Settle down, little goblins.
Kind of hard to tell exactly what's happening in that trailer. It's the story of a girl who, when she gets excited or agitated, and of course she's a teenager, so that happens all the time, she turns into a giant red panda. It's notable because it's the first time Pixar has had a woman of color direct a movie. The director is Dami Shi. She's of Chinese descent. I think she was originally born in China. She was raised in Toronto or in Canada. Now, this is a big gamble for Pixar because the last two Pixar movies were released directly to Disney Plus, and arguably the last three Pixar movies had some level of Disney Plus presence, because if you remember, Onward had kind of a soft opening the week before the pandemic shut things down, and then it went to like VOD and it quickly went on to the Disney Plus service. So this one's going to be an interesting test to see if Pixar can kind of grab that brass ring again. This is also Pixar kind of going outside of the box and not doing the more traditional stuff that Pixar's known for. It's doing something quite different. So we'll see if that one clicks with the audiences. The next one I want to hit is the Free Guy trailer, which is less interesting for the movie and more interesting for the people who are promoting the trailer. And this one comes out in theaters on August 13th.
Well, hello there, and what's up, Reaction Faction? It's Deadpool. This week, I'll be reacting to a trailer for a movie which I honestly thought came out like a year ago, Free Guy. We also have a guest reactor this week, Korg, who was not my first choice, but apparently everyone else was too busy over on Disney Plus. Say hello, Korg.
Hello, I'm made of rocks.
Thank you for having me, Paul. Sorry you're dead.
Let's take a look.
My name is Guy.
Oh, he's named Guy, like the movie's title.
That's pretty clever.
This world, it's a video game. You're not real.
Okay, this looks fun in a last days of Fox fire sale kind of way.
As you can hear, that's Deadpool and Korg. And the reason that's interesting is because Deadpool's from the Fox properties and Korg is from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's one of the first times they've put these characters or any characters from those two universes together because now they're all owned by Disney. So the Free Guy trailer, and it looks kind of fun. It looks like it might be clever. This might be a terrible movie, but it looks like it's whimsical and silly and fun about a guy who becomes self-aware that he's inside a video game. Anyways, that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about how to deter a robber and gunpowder milkshake.
We'll be right back.
Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with the first one that's new in the theaters this week. That is How to Deter a Robber. A family spending vacation in a lake house in Upper Wisconsin get tangled up with a couple robbers who stumble onto them while committing their crime.
Have there been robberies like this in the past?
No. I think these robberies are crimes of opportunity.
Sit down, old man!
So, what now?
Outside. Now.
What's our next move?
They have a gun. We are going to cooperate so the situation doesn't escalate.
Just stay here. Nobody moves.
Okay, nobody moves.
So, have any of you guys ever been robbed before or anything?
This is a comedy. It made a bit of a splash at, I think it was Fantastic Fest last year, even though a lot of that was virtual. It's a home invasion movie, but it's not a serious horror movie home invasion. I'm not a huge fan of the home invasion genre. I find it low-hanging fruit. It's easy to make it scary that somebody comes into your home. And a lot of times the people coming into your home, they're just sadistic monsters and, you know, it's the ultimate horror of your family being harmed and that sort of thing. But there's not a ton of creativity, I think, in the genre. And I've always felt that when there was a genre piece that takes a slightly different angle, that makes it more interesting. And I think this one does it. Like a great example of another home invasion thriller that I thought took a different turn was Your Next, because it went from the home invasion to this crazy revenge type thing. This one's not the same way. This one's less of a horror movie. It's more of a comedy. And it's, like you said, it's about this family who's estranged and mad at each other already. You've got sort of the surly 18-year-old girl who's getting ready to go to college. She's got her boyfriend with them and they're doing Christmas. They're always at each other's throats. They're yelling. They're drinking too much wine. And there's a string of robberies going on around this lake, but it's sort of like that summer home place. And so there's a lot of vacant homes. The robbers are going and just stealing stuff, and they stumble upon this home where the people are still there. And it does kind of fall a bit into the bumbling criminal aspect, because there's two of them. There's one, the guy, he's a little bit, he's high strung, but the girl who's involved, this is exciting for her. The female robber is just kind of like, oh, this is kind of a new experience. Isn't this cool? It starts off with them, with the original people in the house fighting with the family. And then the girl and her boyfriend and the rest of the family goes back to Chicago, but they stay with their uncle and they're kind of caught up in this robbery. It has some very funny moments. It has some very sort of dry humor and tongue in cheek humor. It does put you in that position of what would you do? You know, what would you do if somebody, you know, got the jump on you and they had you tied up at gunpoint? You know, would you cooperate? Would you try to talk to them? Would you try and find a way out? My biggest issue with the movie is it doesn't commit to the absurd comedy. And I'm not looking for slapstick, but it dips back and forth from sort of home invasion thriller to absurd family bickering at each other comedy. And at times it just feels like you're kind of keep changing gears. To a degree that works, but you know, when you see a movie like Save Yourself, which was, I talked about last year, which was about these little alien, these poofs that come down and attack these people who are staying in this cabin. That one leaned into the absurdity of the situation, and you lean far enough into the absurdity of something and you're no longer concerned about the human element because it does become a bit of a joke. That's why you can watch a movie like Deadpool where he's out there killing all these people and laugh, because it's not meant to be taken seriously. You know, whereas if there's a movie where somebody is in fact murdering people, it's horrifying. It tries to walk that line, and I think it's successful in doing that, but it does struggle to where it really should kind of lean in one way or the other. So overall, I mean, it's an interesting movie and you know, it's worth your time. It's unique and it's different, and I will say it's not predictable necessarily, but you know, it's different than some of the stuff you're going to see out there. So I'm going to have to say How to Deter a Robber kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next one, which is Gunpowder Milkshake. Here's a movie that's not to be taken seriously at all. Very violent. Karen Gillan stars as a professional assassin who has a change of heart when she chooses to protect an 8-year-old girl caught up in one of her assignments.
Your talents are needed. Somebody stole from us. We need that money back.
There's a change of plan. They kidnapped an 8-year-old girl. I can't leave her to die.
Oh, you know the drill.
Give the kill order.
Some bad men are coming to hurt us.
We have to go where it's safe.
Okay.
I'm gonna teach you to always guard your back. Hi, Mom.
This dropped on Netflix midweek, so it's been out since Wednesday. And this is an over-the-top violent assassins movie. Ever since they came out with John Wick, however many years ago that was, people have been trying to do a new John Wick. And everybody's been trying, well, this is the female John Wick, or this is the John Wick with a purpose. Or, you know, there's always somebody trying to do a John Wick over-the-top movie. This is the closest you've gotten, I think, since, to get that female John Wick. Because Karen Gillan is this very commanding assassin who knows how to take care of herself. And you have these huge, long scenes of violence and destruction and revenge. And, again, not to be taken seriously. The level of over-the-top violence in this movie would be harrowing and horrible if it were taken seriously. But it's really not. It's a shoot 'em up, goofy, crazy, deliberately over the top movie. And when I say it's like John Wick, it's not just because the action scenes are brilliantly choreographed and bouncing around and going crazy and really going over the top, but also sort of the framework of it, where John Wick was an assassin and there's this sort of elite group of assassins and they have their safe houses and their safe spaces where they can't bring their guns or their weapons, where they can meet or interact with each other. And they have that in this one, only instead of it being the hotel in John Wick, it's a diner. And then there's a library where Michelle Yeoh and Angela Bassett and Carly Gugino work basically as weapon experts, but it's at the front of a library. And it's a lot of women kicking butt and taking names or just leaving the names on the floor in a big pile of blood. But this is fun. It's silly. It's crazy. I'm glad that Karen Gillan's getting a little bit more roles coming her way, you know, because here's the thing that I think she struggles with is, you know, as popular as she was in Doctor Who and as good as she was in that, her next big role was in Marvel in the Guardians of the Galaxy as Gamora's, half sister or whatever. But you almost don't recognize her because, you know, she's bald and she's half robot. And I mean, there's not much of Karen Gillan to recognize in that role. So this one gives her a chance to have her real face and her as a recognizable person. She doesn't use her original accent, but that's okay. You know, I'll forgive that. But you know, this is a fun over the top movie and it's silly and obnoxious. I mean, but it's also just beautifully shot. It has a color palette that is amazing. A lot of times in some of these movies, especially some of these, you know, assassin type movies, it can be very dark because a lot of stuff's taking place at night and they're sneaking around. This one has a vibrant color palette that's almost oversaturated that just looks, you know, like a bubblegum wrapper. It's a fantastic looking film and it's also a lot of fun. So I'm going to have to say Gunpowder Milkshake totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Space Jam, A New Legacy, and Escape Room, Tournament of Champions.
Y'all ready for this?
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump back into the movie reviews with Space Jam, A New Legacy. Superstar LeBron James gets sucked into the digital world to save his son by playing a basketball game with the Looney Tunes.
Welcome to the space.
Welcome, King James.
I am the king of this domain.
This is the Serververse.
What'd you do to my son? Where's Dom?
The only way you're getting your son back is if you and I play a little basketball.
I'm a cartoon?
What's up, Doc?
I need to assemble an elite team to help give my son back.
I know what you're looking for. A dream team.
Welcome to the Space Jam.
This was one of those famous sequels that took forever to get made. I mean, the original Space Jam came out in 1996, which was 25 years ago. And they finally got a phenom basketball player because, you know, nobody had reached the level and not just, I don't know the game basketball very much. I don't follow it. So I'm not talking about like the scores, but in terms of the attention, I think LeBron James is the closest you've gotten to a Michael Jordan in the last couple decades. And I think LeBron does a good job in this movie. Let's start with that. Already, he's not an actor. He can do like supporting roles. He has some bit parts. Like in Trainwreck, he did very well. He's the best part of Trainwreck, really. And he's not even dived into doing it like The Rock, you know, started in sports and ended up becoming an actor in action movies. So now he's been in so many movies, you know, you need to make sure you have some acting chops. And I'm not saying that he's a great actor just naturally, but he's unrefined. I mean, he spends his time playing basketball because that's his job. So one of the things they do is they structure this movie actually really quite well in such a way where he's not left hanging on his own on screen trying to emote. It's kind of what they did with Wonder Woman. If you looked at the first Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot was good for the role, but she was still a little bit unrefined in acting. So whenever she had, you know, heavier scenes, they put other actors in there with her who could help carry her along. And that served the movie. And they do that as well with this one. They don't give him, you know, he doesn't have his Oscar clip moment, and he shouldn't, because he's a basketball player. This is not his forte. He's playing off his image. They play him as a sort of fictionalized version of himself. And I mean, the beginning of it starts off, and it's very similar to the first Space Jam. I mean, almost, you know, to the letter in terms of how they set it up, you know, with the flashback to his childhood and then his superstardom and then his family life. And then you bring in the bad guys and the Looney Tunes. You know, I mean, it almost hits it beat by beat, but of course it's updated for 25 years later. And it's not a direct sequel. It's not like they're not like, remember what happened 25 years ago? This is just, it's sort of a sequel in tone, which is what you should do for a movie like this. This one, it takes him into the digital realm, and you've got Don Cheadle playing the bad guy rather than people from space, with Danny DeVito doing this alien bug. So when LeBron gets sucked in there with his son, his son's not interested in basketball, but wants to do coding and wants to play video games and make video games. And LeBron is trying to reconcile that because he's trying to bring his sons up to become basketball stars as well. And it's really funny because there's a scene where they're playing on the court. You know, if you're in LeBron James's house, you just don't play on the court. That's where you work. And I feel like my kids are the same way. When they watch a movie, I'm like, you can't just watch it and garbage it out and let it go flying over you. And not to say I'm comparable to LeBron James as a basketball star, but I think you could say that I'm the LeBron James of movie reviews. The movie itself is very brightly colored, especially when they get into the digital world and they start going to not just the Looney Tunes world, but they bring in other properties from Warner Brothers. It's very similar to how Ready Player One, how they had all these intellectual properties just kind of plopped in the background, and it was just a giant load of Easter eggs, especially when they get to the basketball game and they've got the audience there. I mean, they got everyone from, you know, the Herculoids and Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble, and they got Captain Caveman, Space Ghost. They've got Batman and Robin from the 60s TV show. They've got Catwoman from the movie in 1992. They've got Alex and the Droogs from Clockwork Orange. And I don't know how many 10-year-olds are going to be like, yeah, Clockwork Orange, that's my jam. I mean, that's put in there more for the adults to see. I mean, Pennywise the Clown shows up on the sidelines. But when they get to the Looney Tunes characters, I mean, I'm watching it. It's a lot. It throws a lot of stuff at you. And when LeBron James goes into the Looney Tunes and he actually turns into a cartoon, which is kind of cute and clever, then they start collecting the Looney Tunes. And even I remember thinking, going, oh my God, this is a bit much. And I'm like, what am I saying? It's a Looney Tunes movie. Looney Tunes are over the top and crazy. And I love Looney Tunes. I grew up with Looney Tunes. But this is for kids. This is a kids movie. And if you go back to the original Space Jam, it's obnoxious and crazy and over the top and in your face, and at times is a bit relentless with its insanity. But they're Looney Tunes. What do you expect? It's a movie with a cartoon rabbit. So I had a lot of fun with this. It's not exactly for me. I mean, it's for, basically, if you go back to the original Space Jam. Actually, let's talk about the original Space Jam here really quickly. And I'll play a trailer for it. You got Michael Jordan teaming up with the Looney Tunes to play basketball against an interstellar goon squad.
Pardon me, Mr. Jordan. Could I have your your John Hancock?
What's going on here?
We need your help!
You heard of the Dream Team? Well, we're the Mean Team.
Ready?
Yeah!
Warner Brothers presents Jordan.
Bucks.
Bunny.
Special delivery!
Together, they just might save the world.
Now, when you compare these two movies, like I said, they're almost exactly the same. I mean, they follow the same formula, and they follow the same beats and the changes and the characters. And the big difference is in the new one, they're going into the digital world. And in the old one, for some reason, they go into the inside of the earth is where somehow the Looney Tunes are buried in the earth. I don't know why, but it follows that same premise. And somebody like LeBron James, I imagine back in 1996, loved Space Jam and watched it all the time because it was completely in his wheelhouse. He was a basketball guy. Like I said, I'm not a big basketball fan, so the basketball stuff is kind of lost on me, but I'm a big Looney Tunes fan, and that's who this movie's for. It's for kids. It's for adults who like basketball and like the Looney Tunes. It's not to be taken seriously. It's not trying to change the world. It's trying to tell a fun, crazy, energetic story, and in that it works. And what's interesting, it's in theaters now, and it's a big screen movie. It really does serve to be on the big screen because of the effects and the immersive experience. Watch it then on HBO Max when you get home. And the reason you want to watch it then is because there's so many Easter eggs in there. Like I said, you could spend probably about all day long trying to find all the different characters in the background. And there's just so many of them. And that's kind of what I found fun about watching the movie is trying to, oh, there's this character from that cartoon or that show, or, you know, there's a Harry Potter character, there's Dr. Freeze, you know, and there's all these different characters from the Warner Brothers vault. And that's what I think is fun. And that's really sort of the value of having this come out in theaters, and then you can watch it on HBO and take your time to pause it. But I'm going to say Space Jam, A New Legacy kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's quickly swerve by Escape Room Tournament of Champions. In this sequel, the survivors of the first film must compete to escape from a set of traps pitted against other winners.
We were lucky to get out of those escape rooms alive.
I need to know that the criminals who killed the four people in front of me are held accountable.
They're hiding in plain sight in the middle of Manhattan.
We need to stop them.
I'm in.
Ah! You gotta be kidding me.
Escape rooms.
No, no, no.
It's happening again.
You guys have played the game before?
So what is this? Like a tournament of champions?
This one actually kind of looks interesting, and some of the buzz I've heard is it's not bad, but here's the problem, and this is where we're going forward here. They didn't show this to everybody. I reached out to Sony and I'm like, hey, I'd like to watch this movie. And they're like, well, you can come to these screenings. We have one in New York and one in LA. And I'm like, I'm from Columbus, Ohio. Oh, I'm sorry. I go, can you send me a link? No, we're not doing screening links. And I'm like, well, that means you don't want anyone to see this movie. We're not confident enough to screen it elsewhere. And there's a lot of critics elsewhere. And I mean, heck, if you're listening to me, you're hearing a critic who's not from New York or LA. And there's a value to that, but they don't care. So they don't want you to see this movie. So don't. Screw them. I don't care. Escape Room Tournament of Champions has got to suck.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Fear Street Part 3, 1666, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Schmigadoon. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Fear Street Part 3, 1666. This final installment of the trilogy goes back to the 17th century to tell the real story of Sarah Fear, who was hanged for witchcraft.
We can end the curse. For Shadyside.
You see it now.
Sarah!
The devil has come to feast on our misdeeds. And his darkness grows within each of us.
Sarah Fear, you know nothing good comes from those woods after sundown.
If you recall from the last 2 weeks, I have been a big fan of this Fear Street movie experience that they have on Netflix. And actually, I think, again, I boast a lot about streaming. I like streaming. I think that they're doing some neat stuff in streaming. And Netflix is breaking some new ground. Not just the announcement that they're going to be starting to get into video games, which is going to be another huge thing. But the fact that, you know, they're doing stuff like when they did Bandersnatch or the Kimmy Schmidt movie where you could, it's an adventure that you can choose yourself. I don't want to infringe upon any copyrights or trademarks. But they also did this thing with Fear Street where it's this trilogy of movies, one coming out each week. Obviously, it's a horror movie, so they're all set for horror audiences. And the first two were definitely slasher movie send-ups. They're movies that were meant to evoke slasher movies of a certain era, the 90s and the 70s, or early 80s. And so this last installment is a little bit different, because first of all, it goes back to 1666, where it deals with the story of Sarah Fear. It's still tied to the 1994 movie because they have heard the story of what happened in 1978, and now they're trying to make things right with the ghost of Sarah Fear. And the characters from this movie are basically transported back to 1666, and you see them as the characters in 1666. So you kind of have this curtain call. So even people who've gotten killed in the other movies, they show up in this as characters from this, this sort of this pilgrimish town. It's not really pilgrims. They're Irish descendants because all of them are trying to do Irish accents just as much as I try to do an Irish accent. And I'm not very good at that. The movie itself is like 2 hours long. The part in 1666 is a little more than half of that. And it gives you that background. It tells you who the characters were back then. And it's not a slasher movie in the 1600s. It's a witch movie. It's something about them trying to track down this witch and the suspects that's going on. It feels more like a Salem witch trials angle of a movie, or like that movie, The Witch, that came out several years ago, although not nearly as much of a slow burn as that. But it's a period piece about witches. So it does break from the tradition of being a slasher movie, but that's because it gives you the backstory. But it's not just a 2 hour movie about witches. They wrap up that story. And then, of course, the last half of the movie, or the last third or so, takes place in 1994. So it can wrap up the characters in the, well, quote unquote, contemporary setting, even though the setting's over 25 years ago, but it wraps up the story. So this is kind of like part 3 and 4, but it's all kind of crammed into one movie, which is good because I think a 2 hour movie of witch trials would have been a little bit rough. But they don't do that. They let this thing move, and it has a satisfying ending, and it wraps things up, and it ties all three movies together. And I think it does so quite well. I really appreciated how this movie set itself up and stayed true to the horror movie genre and held its own and kind of was this interesting at-home cinematic experience to get a trilogy that's binge watchable, but is also released over the course of 3 weeks. And it's this hybrid of the Netflix model of dropping everything all at once, and the stuff that like Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus do where they release an episode a week. So yeah, Fear Street Part 3, 1666 is more than just 1666. And I'm going to say, like the other ones, because it works quite well as a cap to the series, it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Schmigadoon! Exclamation mark. A couple whose relationship is on the rocks goes camping for the weekend and stumbles into a magical land where they are part of a stage musical and they can only escape when they find true love.
Woo! Can we go now?
Already?
What?
We can't leave. It's like magic. We're in an actual musical.
Please, God, no.
Everybody! They said we're only here till we found true love. Do you think this is true love?
What does that even mean? Who knows what Schmigadoon thinks is true love?
Which of you ladies wants to cross this bridge with me?
You want to try with other people?
This one stars Keegan-Michael Key and Cicely Strong, who you've seen in plenty of comedic roles before. I mean, of course, Cicely Strong's on Saturday Night Live, well-known for that. Keegan-Michael Key was Key and Peele and a bunch of other things. He shows up in a lot of things. And they're a nice little couple, but they're having a rough time. They go on this long camping trip that's like a hiking thing, and they're supposed to camp in the woods. And they find a bridge that they go over, so it has this remnants of Brigadoon, if you're familiar with that musical. They go over this bridge, and they are transported to this magical little serene town. And the bridge thing motif is a Brigadoon thing. But the town that they end up with is sort of like early 1900s Americana, which, you know, sort of evoking the Music Man. And there's several key musicals that they pay homage to. For example, Schmigadoon and Brigadoon. Obviously, you got that and sort of the setup of them going over this magical bridge. You've also got, like I said, the Music Man because of the setting and the type of characters that they're running into the town. They even have Kristen Chenoweth playing the, you know, pick a little, talk a little woman who does, it's marginally a ripoff of the song Trouble from the Music Man. It also makes jokes about like Sound of Music and Oklahoma, the original Schmigadoon song. It evokes more of a feeling of Oklahoma than it does Brigadoon. But this is the kind of TV series that is custom made for people who are fans of musical theater. Now, I've got a lot of those in my house. My wife's a big fan. My sons were involved in musical theater in high school. And like my wife was watching, I let her watch the early screening links because right now the first two episodes are available on Apple TV Plus, and then they're going to be dropping one a week throughout the end of August, whatever's the next 4 weeks, you get one new episode a week. And my wife just had a blast watching it because she's seen all of these movies and she's a big fan of musicals. And even in the show, Cicely Strong's character is into musicals as well. Keegan-Michael Key is less into musicals. But that kind of makes it funny because he's irritated because he's stuck in one. And they have to play by these rules, and it's produced by Lorne Michaels, directed by Barry Sonnenfeld. It's got a lot of people from either musical theater, where, of course, you got Kristen Chenoweth in there, but you also have a lot of Saturday Night Live alums, like Fred Armisen shows up, and Martin Short shows up at one point. So it's a really well-cast thing, and it's very fun and clever, and it's because it's on streaming, they are allowed to do these short six-episode series. Back in the day when you'd have broadcast television being the king, every series went for 24 episodes. You know, you know, maybe they could get six, but then if they could get 13 and then get the back nine episodes, then they could get that 24. 24 episodes a year is exhausting. And that's why procedural shows like Law and Order or Grey's Anatomy do well over that arc. But, you know, a show like this, I don't know if you could sustain 24 episodes. It would get boring and tedious. And the fact that they could do like a six episode series, which is very common in the UK, and now you're starting to see that on these streaming series where they have six or eight episodes and you can tell a better arc. And that works in this series. It wraps it up in the six episodes and makes it worthwhile watching. You know, and unfortunately, if you really love it, you only have six episodes, but at least they're not dragging and padding out the show. So, yeah, I really enjoyed Schmigadoon. Even though I'm not a huge fan of musical theater, I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also available this week on DVD and Blu-ray, we've got Mortal Kombat finding its way onto disc. You've got Wrath of Man, another pandemic release that's finding its way on disc. The SpongeBob movie, Sponge on the Run, it's been on Paramount Plus, but now you can get it if you don't have that service. And then there's a bunch of vintage titles like Deep Cover is getting a Criterion release. Snatch is coming out in 4K. The Unfortunate House of Wax remake is getting a collector's edition. The Pianist and Almost Famous is coming out in 4K. And then finally on TV, you've got Pennyworth Season 2 and I Dream of Jeannie, the complete series. And that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Snake Eyes, Old, and Joe Bell. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.